Budapest University of Technology and Economics, Language Examination Center. This recording is copyright. Advanced Level Examination. Listening, Part 1. You will hear a text. Read the candidate's copy beforehand. You will have 1 minute for that. Then listen to the text and make notes in English. You will hear the text twice. After the first listening, you will have 2 minutes to answer the questions. After the second listening, you will have 2 minutes to finalize your answers in English on the yellow answer sheet. Now you'll have 1 minute to read the prompts. Now we are ready to start. Listen carefully.
Power struggle.
Nuclear power is back on the agenda in a big way. US President George Bush wants Congress to make it easier to build nuclear plants. The newly appointed UK cabinet is expected to consider plans for a nuclear renaissance. And at the OECD forum last week in Paris, France, advocates of nuclear power argued passionately that it is the only way to curb global warming. Countries in North America and Europe, with the exception of France and Finland, turned their backs on nuclear power following the nuclear accidents of the 1970s and 1980s, and rising public concern over what to do with radioactive waste. Today, with global warming a major issue, the fact that nuclear plants generate far less carbon dioxide than fossil fuel plants has given nuclear companies a new selling point, at least in Europe. So should we dust off nuclear power and give it another try? To answer that question, we need to think about what we really want from our energy sources. We want them to have a small environmental impact, yet be able to supply energy on a huge scale. We want costs to be low, the method of generation to be safe, and for there to be plenty of available fuel. The International Energy Agency estimates that 2/3 of the extra energy demand over the next 25 years will come from developing countries. So whatever sources we choose must be tradable worldwide. Also, in the post-9/11 world, we want energy sources that cannot be abused by terrorists or rogue states. Nuclear scores high on its low CO2 emissions, but it loses out by leaving a nasty legacy. Its high-level radioactive waste needs to be secured for tens of thousands of years. Despite 40 years of assurances from the nuclear industry that this is an engineering problem, no one has solved it. And it scarcely makes sense to generate more waste when we cannot dispose of what we already have. Another bugbear for nuclear power is that it appears to be expensive. Its costs have never been calculated to everyone's satisfaction, partly because government subsidies have muddied the water, and partly because back-end costs for such things as waste disposal are uncertain. Nuclear power has certainly not won round free market investors. No plants have been built within deregulated electricity markets. Perhaps nuclear's biggest disadvantage is international security. The level of confidence in the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and nuclear safeguards is low. North Korea is the latest country to show how easy it is to divert nuclear fuel to make weapons, while nuclear sites are likely to remain targets for terrorists. Such concerns limit where plants can be built. So, are there alternatives to nuclear? The cheapest option by far is to improve energy efficiency by using waste heat from power plants, say. Then there are renewable energy sources, which suffer none of nuclear's disadvantages, though they have problems of their own. The chief criticism of renewables is that they will never supply energy on the scale needed. It is true that wind power alone will never do the job, but add in tidal power, microhydro, and biomass, and the problem starts to disappear. Wind power and biomass are nearly as cheap as coal, while other renewables, such as wave power and photovoltaic cells, are moving steadily towards competitiveness. The environmental impact of renewables is generally low, though wind farms have run into problems, especially with people who do not want them spoiling rural views. But there are ways round this, such as building wind farms offshore, or siting single or small numbers of turbines near towns, effectively recreating the medieval pattern of windmills. Perhaps the best evidence of the potential of renewables comes from Germany. It wants to phase out nuclear power by 2025, so is switching rapidly to other sources. It already generates more than 8% of its electricity from renewables, such as wind and biomass, and is the world's largest user of photovoltaic cells. It is on target for renewables to supply half of all its energy needs by 2050, reducing its carbon emissions to a fifth of their 1990 levels. Given our limited resources, we must put our money behind the best global solution. Rather than reinvent nuclear plants, we must move towards leaner, more localized, sustainable ways to generate energy. That means more research and development into energy efficiency and renewables, and a determined campaign to deploy them.
Now listen again.
Power struggle.
Nuclear power is back on the agenda in a big way. US President George Bush wants Congress to make it easier to build nuclear plants. The newly appointed UK cabinet is expected to consider plans for a nuclear renaissance. And at the OECD forum last week in Paris, France, advocates of nuclear power argued passionately that it is the only way to curb global warming. Countries in North America and Europe, with the exception of France and Finland, turned their backs on nuclear power following the nuclear accidents of the 1970s and 1980s, and rising public concern over what to do with radioactive waste. Today, with global warming a major issue, The fact that nuclear plants generate far less carbon dioxide than fossil fuel plants has given nuclear companies a new selling point, at least in Europe. So should we dust off nuclear power and give it another try? To answer that question, we need to think about what we really want from our energy sources. We want them to have a small environmental impact, yet be able to supply energy on a huge scale. We want costs to be low, the method of generation to be safe, and for there to be plenty of available fuel. The International Energy Agency estimates that 2/3 of the extra energy demand over the next 25 years will come from developing countries. So whatever sources we choose must be tradable worldwide. Also, in the post-9/11 world, we want energy sources that cannot be abused by terrorists or rogue states. Nuclear scores high on its low CO2 emissions, but it loses out by leaving a nasty legacy. Its high-level radioactive waste needs to be secured for tens of thousands of years. Despite 40 years of assurances from the nuclear industry that this is an engineering problem, no one has solved it. And it scarcely makes sense to generate more waste when we cannot dispose of what we already have. Another bugbear for nuclear power is that it appears to be expensive. Its costs have never been calculated to everyone's satisfaction, partly because government subsidies have muddied the water, and partly because back-end costs for such things as waste disposal are uncertain. Nuclear power has certainly not won round free market investors. No plants have been built within deregulated electricity markets. Perhaps nuclear's biggest disadvantage is international security. The level of confidence in the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and nuclear safeguards is low. North Korea is the latest country to show how easy it is to divert nuclear fuel to make weapons, while nuclear sites are likely to remain targets for terrorists. Such concerns limit where plants can be built. So, are there alternatives to nuclear? The cheapest option by far is to improve energy efficiency by using waste heat from power plants, say. Then there are renewable energy sources, which suffer none of nuclear's disadvantages, though they have problems of their own. The chief criticism of renewables is that they will never supply energy on the scale needed. It is true that wind power alone will never do the job, but add in tidal power, microhydro, and biomass, and the problem starts to disappear. Wind power and biomass are nearly as cheap as coal, while other renewables, such as wave power and photovoltaic cells, are moving steadily towards competitiveness. The environmental impact of renewables is generally low, though wind farms have run into problems, especially with people who do not want them spoiling rural views. But there are ways round this, such as building wind farms offshore, or siting single or small numbers of turbines near towns, effectively recreating the medieval pattern of windmills. Perhaps the best evidence of the potential of renewables comes from Germany. It wants to phase out nuclear power by 2025, so is switching rapidly to other sources. It already generates more than 8% of its electricity from renewables, such as wind and biomass, and is the world's largest user of photovoltaic cells. It is on target for renewables to supply half of all its energy needs by 2050, reducing its carbon emissions to a fifth of their 1990 levels. Given our limited resources, we must put our money behind the best global solution. Rather than reinvent nuclear plants, we must move towards leaner, more localized, sustainable ways to generate energy. That means more research and development into energy efficiency and renewables, and a determined campaign to deploy them.
Now you can copy your answers onto the answer sheet. This is the end of part one. Listening part two. You will hear a text. Read the 10 statements on the candidate copy beforehand. You will have 2 minutes for that. Then listen to the text. If you think the statement is correct, put a tick under T. If you think the statement is not correct, put a tick under F. You will hear the text twice. After the first listening, you will have 2 minutes to answer the questions. After the second listening, you will have 2 minutes to finalize your answers. Indicate your answers on the yellow answer sheet. Now you'll have 2 minutes to read the statements through. Now we are ready to start. Listen carefully.
Lessons from Extraordinary Women. As producer, writer, editor of the documentary series Second Chance, Make It Work, I've had the privilege of telling the stories of 65 extraordinary women over the past 3 years. Second Chance has, as its mandate, a mission to explore the lives of everyday women who have overcome some kind of obstacle and then used the wisdom they have gained to create something new in their lives. These inspiring women have developed their unique and often adverse life experiences into skills which they now use in their work lives. Some people achieve mastery over challenges posed by physical disability, then share their skills with others. Lorraine Ciel lost the majority of her hearing after a bout with mumps at age 12. Nevertheless, with her parents' support, she persevered through high school and university and became a pharmacist in her native Malaysia. Today, she has found work that is more suited to her skills. With her profound understanding of the learning difficulties of the deaf, she enrolled in a deaf education program at York University and is now a high school teacher for deaf teens. For many people, making the best of a situation that is in many ways debilitating can be the catalyst of re-education and a new career direction. Jennifer Mason, an aspiring opera singer, became debilitated with rheumatoid arthritis before she could get her career started. Always creative, Jennifer looked for other ways to express herself. She recorded an album, Mothers of the World, and today is a portrait artist. Jennifer is also a poster girl and spokesperson for AARC, the Arthritis and Autoimmunity Research Centre in Toronto. Sometimes overcoming the many obstacles of immigrating to a new country can provide the necessary skills needed to start a new venture. During her teen years, Mina Jafari Rowe studied cosmetology in the United States. But then, when Iran was plunged into revolution, Mina found these skills were no longer valued. When her husband was incarcerated for liberal ideas, Mina was forced to flee the country with four small children. As a refugee in Turkey, Mina soon discovered entrepreneurial ways of providing for her children. After 10 years in Turkey, Mina finally relocated her family to Canada. Here, Mina combined her earlier passion for cosmetology with her more recently developed business skills. She started a beauty salon, which soon became a small spa empire. Many adults learn where their career interests lie when they are well past the standard formal time for career training. Meredith Seafield Grant suffered from anorexia and bulimia throughout her 20s and early 30s, when many people are focused on developing their career skills. Once she overcame her eating disorder, however, Meredith was able to use her experience to expand her career and to help others. Today, Meredith conducts educational workshops on eating disorders and is on the board of directors of Sheena's Place, a support centre for people with eating disorders in downtown Toronto. She has also written a book about those experiences, Road to the Rainbow. Many great non-profit organisations are filled with people who are passionate about the service they offer. That's because many of the staff members were formerly the recipients of the services they now provide. Diana Capone, along with her mother and siblings, suffered tremendous abuse from her father throughout her childhood. After numerous trips to psychiatric wards and overcoming drug addiction, Diana was motivated to change after becoming a mum. She put herself through college and then began working for a transition centre called Nellie's. Next, Diana became the executive director of the Ontario Council of Alternative Businesses, an organisation which exclusively hires psychiatric survivors and helps them build their own businesses. Currently, Diana is the Client Employment Coordinator at the Centre for Addiction and Mental Health, where she works to break down barriers between employees and those who use their services. Opportunities for growth and change are often even more difficult for women, as they are usually the primary caregivers for their children. But sometimes, the desire to make a better life for their child is in itself enough impetus to make changes. When Suzanne Dimmer's daughter became the victim of childhood sexual abuse, Suzanne was galvanised to see justice done. After pursuing a conviction for the offender, Suzanne realised her passion was in pursuing victims' rights. With small children at home, Suzanne went back to school in order to gain the necessary skills to develop her career. Today, Suzanne is employed by MADD, where she continues to fight for the rights of victims of crime. Adult education includes all the experiences that we have during the course of our lives and what we have learnt from them. Everyday life experiences enrich our lives, building in us skills that we can and do use in the future.
Now listen again.
Lessons from Extraordinary Women. As producer, writer, editor of the documentary series Second Chance, Make It Work, I've had the privilege of telling the stories of 65 extraordinary women over the past 3 years. Second Chance has, as its mandate, a mission to explore the lives of everyday women who have overcome some kind of obstacle and then used the wisdom they have gained to create something new in their lives. These inspiring women have developed their unique and often adverse life experiences into skills which they now use in their work lives. Some people achieve mastery over challenges posed by physical disability, then share their skills with others. Lorraine Ciel lost the majority of her hearing after a bout with mumps at age 12. Nevertheless, with her parents' support, she persevered through high school and university and became a pharmacist in her native Malaysia. Today, she has found work that is more suited to her skills. With her profound understanding of the learning difficulties of the deaf, she enrolled in a deaf education program at York University and is now a high school teacher for deaf teens. For many people, making the best of a situation that is in many ways debilitating can be the catalyst of re-education and a new career direction. Jennifer Mason, an aspiring opera singer, became debilitated with rheumatoid arthritis before she could get her career started. Always creative, Jennifer looked for other ways to express herself. She recorded an album, Mothers of the World, and today is a portrait artist. Jennifer is also a poster girl and spokesperson for AARC, the Arthritis and Autoimmunity Research Centre in Toronto. Sometimes overcoming the many obstacles of immigrating to a new country can provide the necessary skills needed to start a new venture. During her teen years, Mina Jafari Rowe studied cosmetology in the United States. But then, when Iran was plunged into revolution, Mina found these skills were no longer valued. When her husband was incarcerated for liberal ideas, Mina was forced to flee the country with 4 small children. As a refugee in Turkey, Mina soon discovered entrepreneurial ways of providing for her children. After 10 years in Turkey, Mina finally relocated her family to Canada. Here, Mina combined her earlier passion for cosmetology with her more recently developed business skills. She started a beauty salon, which soon became a small spa empire. Many adults learn where their career interests lie when they are well past the standard formal time for career training. Meredith Seafield Grant suffered from anorexia and bulimia throughout her 20s and early 30s, when many people are focused on developing their career skills. Once she overcame her eating disorder, however, Meredith was able to use her experience to expand her career and to help others. Today, Meredith conducts educational workshops on eating disorders and is on the board of directors of Sheena's Place, a support centre for people with eating disorders in downtown Toronto. She has also written a book about those experiences, Road to the Rainbow. Many great non-profit organisations are filled with people who are passionate about the service they offer. That's because many of the staff members were formerly the recipients of the services they now provide. Diana Capone, along with her mother and siblings, suffered tremendous abuse from her father throughout her childhood. After numerous trips to psychiatric wards and overcoming drug addiction, Diana was motivated to change after becoming a mum. She put herself through college and then began working for a transition centre called Nellie's. Next, Diana became the executive director of the Ontario Council of Alternative Businesses, an organisation which exclusively hires psychiatric survivors and helps them build their own businesses. Currently, Diana is the Client Employment Coordinator at the Centre for Addiction and Mental Health, where she works to break down barriers between employees and those who use their services. Opportunities for growth and change are often even more difficult for women, as they are usually the primary caregivers for their children. But sometimes, the desire to make a better life for their child is in itself enough impetus to make changes. When Suzanne Dimmer's daughter became the victim of childhood sexual abuse, Suzanne was galvanised to see justice done. After pursuing a conviction for the offender, Suzanne realised her passion was in pursuing victims' rights. With small children at home, Suzanne went back to school in order to gain the necessary skills to develop her career. Today, Suzanne is employed by MADD, where she continues to fight for the rights of victims of crime. Adult education includes all the experiences that we have during the course of our lives and what we have learnt from them. Everyday life experiences enrich our lives, building in us skills that we can and do use in the future.
Now you can copy your answers onto the answer sheet. This is the end of the test.